for me personally, my parents were good examples where they said to me, if you can be passionate about something and you are able to work in that field, that's the ultimate, because then you enjoy what you do because you're going to spend most of your time doing it.
John Dutton.
I'm very well, thank you. My pleasure to join you.
Arman Ahluwalia.
Thank you so much, Eugene. This is quite an honor. I appreciate you you extending the offer to come here and speak today.
Pedro Diaz-Ridao.
First of all, thanks for having me and excited, you know, to be part of this podcast.
Ronan Doniger.
Huge. Thank you very much. I suppose, first of all, for having me on your show.
Dean Butchin.
The key point is ask, 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 and never give up.
And welcome to eProcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to eProcast. I'm your host, The Big E, and I really hope you are all enjoying this podcast so far and getting plenty of value out of it. If so, please do me a favor and go subscribe, leave a rate and review, and tell a friend about this podcast, and let's grow this bad boy. It would mean a lot to me. This is the Christmas edition of the podcast, and before diving into the conversation with this week's guest, I just wanted to say Merry Christmas to you, your families, and friends. Definitely a different year, but hey, 2021 is around the corner. I personally took a lot out of this year. Crazy 2020. Let's say the least I did was to start this podcast, so it's definitely a win. Few things from the sports world that pops into my head right now and what I'm following are these. As I am on vacation now in the US, visiting my brother here in Pensacola, Florida, definitely having my eyeballs on the NBA 2020-21 tip-off, and oh boy, just finished watching Celtics-Bucks game, and it is definitely no bueno if you have a weak heart. The back and forth was crazy. One thing that stood out for me, though, was the fact that Bucks still has no jersey patch sponsor. I believe they're still in negotiations after they extended their contract with Giannis. Also, it has been a great week for Indianapolis as Pacers defeated Knicks in Game 1, with Sabonis being back and looking strong. Also, even if we're still in pandemic, I had a chance to attend a live NFL game, and namely Indianapolis Colts hosting the Houston Texans at Lucas Oil Stadium and pulling off that W. It was definitely a different experience as there were allowed only 10,000 fans. As a reminder, the Lucas Oil Stadium has almost 70,000 seat capacity. But still, excited that even if it was limited capacity, some states allow fans to attend games. The story of the week for me, though, was the PNC Championships in Orlando, Florida. I am not well educated in golf yet, but I enjoyed watching this event so much. And the most memorable story was the duo of Tiger Woods and his son Charlie, who is only 11 years old. Yes, yes, you heard it right. Charlie Woods is the youngest ever participant at the PNC Championships. I love this event so much purely for bringing families together and creating memories, but damn, Charlie is 11 and he's so good. Love this kid. So now to the fun stuff. This week, we're diving deeper into broadcasting world and namely sports commentating world. I was joined by the legend, let's say the rugby legend, Dallin Sanford, English commentator for World Rugby. Dallin is an ex-Eagle. He played rugby sevens for the USA on the World Sevens Series. And after his playing career, after trying multiple things, he found himself on the commentating arena. Starting with Rugby Town Sevens, the yearly tournament, where we actually met for the first time in 2017, which is usually played in the Rugby Town USA in Denver, Colorado. And now working for World Rugby on the World 7 Series. And also he went last year to Japan to work for Rugby World Cup as well. We dove very deep into challenges he went through to squeeze maximum value for you guys. I personally learned a lot and I hope you will get a lot of value as well. Enjoy.
Welcome to a new episode of eProcast, and I'm excited. I'm joined today in this beautiful weather. I'm currently here in Florida, in Pensacola, and it's awesome. I enjoyed the family time, and definitely makes easier the conversations with my US guests. And I have alongside me today, Dallin Sanford. He is currently working for World Rugby as a commentator in English, also together with his colleagues in other languages. And he will share more about how he gets the job done for World Rugby. And also he is a former Eagle. And for the audience, Dallin, you can share what an Eagle mean to be to the world, because not everyone is a rugby freak, if you will, here on the show. So thanks for taking the time to join me. I'm really excited for this one.
Yeah, thanks firstly for setting this up and having me on. And things are going well. One has to be quite creative and adaptive in 2020 with everything going on in the world. And so you talk about the climate. Well, I was in California. My wife and I were there for about 17 years. And then we moved closer to her family, which is here in the Northeast. So we've had snow last week. So it's been quite a change for us, but a change is very good sometimes.
No, that's really cool. And also regarding that Eagle status, why don't you share your background? And it's going to be fun because I know you both from a player perspective and now currently as you're more on my side as well, the business side, as a commentator. So why don't you share your background, how you got to touch the rugby ball? And of course, how your career evolved as a player and then how you did the transition to where you're at right now.
Yeah, so I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa, where rugby and soccer and cricket, those are real big sports there. And so as a youngster, you got to kind of try them all. I really enjoyed being on a sports field and playing any game with my friends, you know. And so we were very lucky. The school I went to, Rondebosch Boys High School, had about 20 sports fields. And so there was always space for you to run around and cause a bit of havoc on the field. Rugby was always my favorite sport as a youngster. And what I really loved about it was that, you know, you could play on, you know, any size field with a bunch of friends from all over. And, you know, it was just such an exciting kind of sport and you were very active in it as well. And so when I got older, I went to university, I played rugby there as well. But my father was always very keen to tell me that I need to make sure that I study something that I'm interested in. And so I was interested in sports, clearly. So I did sports marketing and that's kind of what my background was then. And he said to me, he said, listen, Dallin, in South Africa, you know, the rugby team there is they called the Springboks. Springbok is a gazelle-like animal that jumps around. So each nation has an emblem for their team, right? That's where the Eagles, well, I'll come to that later. But he said, listen, if you play for the Springboks, that's amazing. If you don't, that's also amazing. Just make sure that when you're done with your sporting career, you have something else to do. And I think that was key for me to focus on off the field as well, because, you know, obviously I was an excitable youngster looking to play professional rugby. And then I got an opportunity to come to America at about 25 years old. So I came to the US, played more rugby. And the great thing about any sport is that you have a community that you can subscribe to. And so as soon as I arrived in America, I had 30 new friends at my rugby club. One of them offered me a job. Another one gave me an old car. Someone else put me up in an extra bedroom that they had. So you had this beautiful community through the sport of rugby. And my passport was my rugby boots. And so that was kind of how I landed in the US. Then through that, I played sevens for the USA. And the USA, their moniker is the Eagles. The US Eagle, of course, is a strong emblem. And that's kind of when the national team embodied that symbol. And so I got a chance to travel the world for 3 years on the Sevens World Series, going to beautiful and amazing destinations. But what I realized was that while my sporting career was coming to a close, I really wanted to be involved somehow on that series, whether it was working in media, marketing, something like that. And so I volunteered my time and effort into doing some journalism, doing some interview type skills and that sort of thing. And it was only until I went to the Rugby World Cup as the media manager for the US national team. So after I was playing, I jumped into that role that I saw people commentating at the stadium. And I was like, wow, that's really exciting and cool. I'd obviously always thought I wanted to be in some sort of, you know, a communicative role in the sport of rugby. But commentary was the one, obviously, that now I look back and realize, well, that obviously was something I needed to do, right? Yeah. And so so those were kind of the ways how I always thought about things off the field and how I could get involved in something. And as you said, you and I met as well at the Rugby Town Sevens, where I was commentating there. In fact, the city of Glendale, Colorado, they were the ones that gave me an opportunity to do broadcasting. I started on the sideline. I worked my way up into the booth doing a color role and then doing a play-by-play lead commentator role where I felt more comfortable. And that's kind of where I've been involved in the last 8 years or so. But it's been a very fascinating and amazing journey, because I've always luckily been very close to the sport of rugby, whether it was playing or whether it was the media side or whether it was now on the broadcasting side. It's often outside of the referee on the field, being a commentator is one of the best seats in the house, because you get to have a clear advantage of the game. You get to call the action, but you don't get to get tackled, you know?
Yeah. Now I have to, a question in my mind is like, which is the best seat in the house, being like, from my perspective as a referee, because I'm still involved as a referee, or being a commentator and being, you know, having the TVs in front of you and also having the big pitch in front of you? So that's a good question to have.
Yes, it is. You know, look, I still love playing. So for many years when I was living in Los Angeles, we played beach rugby. So it was just nice and easy on the body as well, running on the sand and you know, non-contact version of it. So I still love that. But I think there's less pressure being in the commentary booth compared to being a referee, in my opinion. Again, I'm not an official. And what I mean by that pressure is, you know, unfortunately in rugby, you know, there's one team is going to win, one team is going to lose, and people tend to quickly criticize the referee, which I don't like at all. And so for me as a broadcaster, kind of, it's a nice position to be in, because you can highlight the best things about the game, the best things about the players, the officials, and the sport as well, the values and everything else that come along with it. And so you get a chance to bring that to life and bring it to the audience as well. And the great thing is, as you know, as working in the sport, is every game is different. Every tournament is different. Every event is very unique. And so the great thing is it keeps it fresh. It keeps it exciting, that you just, you know, you are passionate about what you do every single time.
Dallin, can you rewind that moment when you got the opportunity to join World Rugby, and how the news came, and of course, fast forward nowadays, you've been involved in a lot of World Rugby competitions like the World Series, the Rugby World Cup, and so on.
Yeah, so the Sevens World Series, that was really exciting. As a player, I was thrilled to be on, you know, the world tour. And then working a bit in the media, we get a chance to travel to a couple of tournaments, like when the US hosted their tournament, and I went to the London Sevens once. But being a commentator is completely different, because there's so few people that get an opportunity to be in broadcasting on the World Series. And I remember reaching out to World Rugby, expressing my interest, and they said to me that, well, number one, they were looking for a South African voice to be on the series, because South Africa is one of the top, you know, 4 to 6 teams in the series, sometimes challenging for the series. Plus, they were looking for somebody that had experience in the North American market, which I had been living in for 15 to 20 years. So that was just coincidental that I ticked both boxes. And the third box they wanted to tick was being a former player. And so that was great, because I was a former player on the series, you know, despite my accent for the Eagles. So it was just a dream come true in 2015 to be a part of that group. And, you know, over the years, I've been given more and more tournaments, which is really exciting. So this season would have been 6 tournaments. So I did Dubai and Cape Town, and then the US leg and the Canadian leg. We were going to go to Singapore and Hong Kong. Obviously, that got, you know, cancelled due to COVID. But it, you know, it's a two-way street, right? It's thrilling and exciting, but at the same time, it also means you leave your family for a lot longer every year. So that's something that obviously I'm trying to balance as well. So they're definitely the highs and lows of both as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned you have to travel as well a lot. And you know, earlier in the podcast, we had Jonathan Logel, the French international, Sevens international player, and you also touched the fact that your dad told you that you got to do something. You have to think of what you'll do after your career is over. And it's an interesting angle, because right now you already did this. So you did this transition successfully. I want to say congratulations on that. It's interesting to have this conversation and the conversation I had with Jonathan, where he's in the process of figuring himself out during his playing career, because a lot of players unfortunately are not thinking about post playing career, and Jonathan is doing a great job. I have to give him a huge shout out of him showing interest in different projects in on a business analytics side, and you know, statistics, innovations, examples of projects with Capgemini and so on. And if you'd have one advice, because we'll touch base more the business side in a second, but giving an advice for those players who are not giving a thought about their post-playing career, what they should do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, and firstly, Jonathan, a great player in the series, love commentating when he plays for France. We'll say that at the end of the day, I think what's most important, if you look back on your life and you look at how much time you spent working, you know, to earn a living and to make your career successful versus how much time you spend living your life, I think there's a very important distinction. If you just work to earn money to pay for then your life that you're going to live, you have a small window of opportunity to live that life. And I think for me personally, my parents were good examples where they said to me, if you can be passionate about something and you are able to work in that field, that's the ultimate, because then you enjoy what you do because you're going to spend most of your time doing it. And so that, I think, you know, to any rugby player or any person who is looking to transition into any career, I get it's a tough decision because sometimes you may be offered a real nice opportunity that has a great financial reward, and that is exciting in the moment. But in the long term, you need to weigh it up and see about your overall health and your overall balance in your life. And I think that is the most important. So for me, you know, when I stopped playing, I got into coaching because I love being around the players. You said being a referee is great, and being a coach is equally as fun because you get to play as well, and you get to coach and you get to guide a team. And so, you know, it's things like that. So I think the best advice is to try everything, try things out. It doesn't matter if you're good at it or not. You can still work at it. And if you enjoy something, I bet you there's a way that you can make it happen. You can make a career out of it and make a living. If I had to tell people 15 years ago that I was going to work full-time in rugby in America, a lot of people would have said, good luck. And there's probably not much opportunity for that, right? And even today, it's still very difficult, but it's something I was keen about. It's something I was passionate about. And I think also diversifying your skill set's important. And so not just focusing on one thing solely. So for me, it was a bit of coaching. It was a bit of media. It was a bit of broadcasting. A few other rugby-related ventures that I was interested in, like helping the community. So I work with Play Rugby USA, working with young inner-city boys and girls, elementary, middle school, and high school, promoting the game through Play Rugby USA, which we'll talk maybe a bit about later. So there are different angles you could do. It really depends, like, what gets you ticking, what gets you moving, and what gets you out of bed, and then go after that and see if you can pursue that full time.
Right. And you bring a good point regarding multitasking, about multiple projects, working at multiple projects at the same time. And because besides being a commentator for World Rugby, you also have multiple other projects. Like we see, if this will go in a video form as well, there's your logo in the back of the podcast that you're already 22 episodes in. And why don't you share more about that? And also other projects you're working, and how you manage to work on them all, how you prioritize them. Because I have this a lot. This is my challenge, everyday challenge of, you know, the time management and the multitasking and multiple projects at the same time, if you will. How you manage, and if you have a piece of advice of how to set up priorities.
Yeah, again, you bring up great questions, and these are things I don't think everybody thinks about, but they need to, because if you want to be successful at one or many things, you need to be able to, you know, have a command of knowing how you work and how you can work in these projects. So just to quickly touch on the Rugby Hive podcast, during 2020 when COVID hit, my main job was commentating around the world and around the US. So that involved a lot of traveling locally and internationally. Now, of course, that got shut down. So my multitasking ability was thinking to myself, okay, what can I do remotely? So content creation came to mind straight away. So when I moved to Boston, I reached out to the New England Free Jacks, a team here in Major League Rugby. And I said, listen, even though I know we won't be meeting up in person, I'm here and I can help with content creation. And I looked at I studied a little bit about their social media and what they've been putting out. And it was a good match because I had the time and energy to put out some things for them that they found helpful. And so that was a way for me to use my broadcasting skills in that. And the same with the Rugby Hive podcast. You know, editing is not a skill set that I possessed before this. I didn't even know how to set up a podcast. 15 years ago, someone said, you need to do this. And I never looked into it, you know, but we had the time and energy. And in fact, a good friend of mine who played for Canada on the Sevens World Series, Robin McDowell, reached out to me and said, you probably have time on your hands now, because I know you won't in the normal world. So, you know, let's team up. And it's been a great creative challenge, and it's something we've really enjoyed. I spent a lot of time working on it, and it is something I think which is nice, because it adds value to what you currently do. So your resume gets built. Now, to answer your main question though about prioritizing and multitasking projects, so Some people work on one job and have one role and one task, and that's fairly straightforward. I have like five or six things on the go all the time. I like to kind of keep busy as well. So that's kind of interesting. So what I find works best for me is having a weekly calendar that lists out all the tasks and activities, the outputs that you want to produce. So if I'm working on a podcast, I know I want to release episode 22 on a Thursday. Well, that's my deadline. Thursday's the deadline for that. How do I get there? I work back from Monday and I prioritize my tasks, what I need to do to get that done. Now, if you're working on five different projects that have different deadlines, you need to make sure you allocate enough time for each project in the day. You don't want to overload yourself because you don't want to be burnt out. So I think balance is important too. So in your day, make sure you have enough time for exercise or just getting outside, enough time for your family, enough time for your friends. So all those things need to be built into your daily schedule that you know the different blocks will be ticked off per day, as opposed to in the past, I have focused, let's say, commentating on the World Series. There are, you know, 16 men's teams and 12 women's teams to prepare. So from every sleep waking moment from Monday through Friday before the tournament start, I'll be focusing on that. And while I was very well prepared, obviously, for the weekend, everything else kind of fell to the wayside, which wasn't good, right? So I had an imbalance in my schedule. So I think if one can create a balance, and the other important thing is that if it's first on your schedule, you know you're going to get it done, right?
Yeah.
The item that's five or six later down the line, you might not get to. So in the past, let's say working out was important to you and you had it number five or six on your list, you probably won't get to it if you get tired later in the day. So you do need to know how you react to the world and how you are and evaluate your priority list there. What I tend to do sometimes is if I have five jobs I'm working on, well, for the five different days, I'm going to start with a different project each day. So I know that I'm going to get a good chunk done of that project per day. I mean, I think those are some ways folks can be successful. I know that's certainly how I've managed it. I also have a scrap board kind of behind my computer, which outline, so I look up, I can see what I've got going on. So that doesn't overwhelm me because I've got it on the board and I know that I've got a few projects due for each one. And I think that's probably a good way to approach it.
Are you using any of those digital solutions when it comes to being more productive, if you will? Like, you know, I heard a lot of solutions like Pomodoro Theory or any other interesting, like, do you have one of your one secret of, you know, Dallin's secret of staying productive?
You know, that's a good one. There are a lot of things out there that certainly do help. I don't necessarily have a special one of those. I'm kind of more old school, if you will, in my way. I have on my desktop, I have the sticky notes that pop up with the different colors, and I've created, you know, the colors to code the different projects I'm working on. So I use that on my desktop. Then I have that kind of scrap board behind. The scrap board also doubles up as a vision board, and I think, you know, it's important in this podcast to mention that, because when people set out, you know, and focus on career or different aspects of their life, and they know what their goal is, they're more likely to achieve it. And so I think it's important to put it down, whether it's in writing or whether it's in picture form or whatever it is, so you have a vision to know what you're looking for. And I sometimes, you know, scrapbook a couple of items, and then I sometimes write a few things. So one of my goals was to be one of the top rugby commentators in the world. That's one of my long-term goals. And so if you don't have it up there, you won't know how to measure it, right? And so getting chosen, like, for example, for the Rugby World Cup to do that event, that was amazing because only four lead commentators got chosen. So, you know, that was a clear vision and you can measure it as well, which I think is important as well. But no other kind of like cool apps or things that I use that I can recommend right now.
And getting back to your commentating career, throughout your career, what has been the main challenges that you have faced in this role, that, you know, just to try to help those who want to become one day commentators in sports industry? Just, you know, we usually say we don't want to repeat the mistakes of others. So I think that's going to be a great moment to share those challenges.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I get asked a lot from folks that want to get into the broadcasting world or commentating world. Number one, you need to have some of your work down in an easy form to view, so that you have at least have a little demo reel of you doing different things so people can see it. And it needs to be quite short because people's attention span, you know, is quite short. Sometimes people send me like 15-minute clip of them commentating or whatever it is, and that's quite long, right? You know, so I think it's important to put down your work and to practice as well. A lot of folks are interested in the broadcasting world or sports commentary, but they haven't really done it themselves. So my advice is always to go volunteer. You know, go to any local team that needs somebody there, or you could just commentate an old game, put the sound down and have the game playing in the background, and you commentate over that. So you get experience, you can hear yourself, you can listen to it back and see how you sound. And those are important starting tips. When it comes to the actual commentary of a game, people underestimate the time it takes and the energy you need to research everybody, because you really want to produce a quality product. It means you need to know all the players on the field, doesn't matter what sport it is. You need to know a bit about the officials. You need to know a bit about the stadium or venue it's being played at, the history between the two teams. Now, obviously, when you get to a higher level game, like an international game, the governing bodies from the two teams will send you information and you have all that. But when you're starting out and don't get enough information, you need to do the research yourself. So I think that's very important. The preparation is always key to success. Like a player, the same thing is off the field as well. I think those are some tips as well. The one thing I find a challenge always is name pronunciations. And if those aren't provided, those are challenging, right? So you do, you know, comment Fiji against Tonga. Now, I'm not from the Pacific Islands, so, you know, those names don't come naturally to me. So my advice is always is to reach directly out to the player if you can. If you can't, reach out to the team manager and at least have them help you or guide you. And, you know, back before COVID, you could go up to the manager and take your phone and record them saying all the names. You know, and so that at least is pretty helpful. Or if you get a player to do that also, because at the end of the day, the worst thing is if you mispronounce somebody's name consistently. It's okay if it happens once in a blue moon or it's accidental. But my last name is Stanford, which you would think is straightforward. But I've had English commentators call me Staniforth, Stanfraud. You know, the different versions of my name, which is a pretty straightforward name. It's not a complicated, you know, Maori name.
It usually happens when you have a guest and, you know, I heard that a lot in the series that, you know, some of the guests that are joining your booth are just sometimes getting it wrong, but it makes sense because they're definitely once, but you're there constantly, you know, 9-10 tournaments.
That's right.
Right. You mentioned the preparation is huge, is key. And I agree. Can't agree more than that. I'll put you into a situation because the question I had was like more about the process of that preparation. But let's get you into a role right now. It's around Dubai Sevens. It was supposed to be Dubai Sevens. Unfortunately, got canceled.
Yes.
Let's think we're in Dubai and tomorrow we have the first day of Dubai Sevens. How your preparation would look like for this event what would you look at? Because Sevens tournament is, as you mentioned, 16 teams, 16 and 12 players. That's like 200 names to know and so on. Like, walk us through your process for this particular case.
Yeah, so what people they underestimate as well is that you talk about the Sevens World Series. Well, the travel is a big component as well, with the time zone changes also. So as a player, generally in the Sevens World Series, you would arrive there maybe the Sunday or the Monday before the week before the tournament starts. So you have a bit of time to acclimatize, you know, get on the ground and that sort of thing. As a commentator, you get there maybe 3 days before the tournament starts. And me coming from the US, time zones are a real challenge. So you're really jet lagged and pretty tired when you get there as well. But the whole week is preparing not only for the 200 players, it's probably closer to 350 to 400 players, because the Dubai Sevens and Cape Town Sevens as well is a combined event. And so you would have 12 women's teams also. So you got your 28 teams to prepare for. Plus you got all your officials, your coaches, and then of course the rivalry between the sides as well. So that whole week is really spent. You obviously meet up with your other commentators, which is great. And we have brilliant chemistry with the people in the series because we know them really well. And they're good people off the field, great rugby resumes as well, great minds. And so that interaction is important as well, because that chemistry comes across really well on the broadcast. So we often, you know, go for lunch, go for dinners. We go sometimes meet up with some of the other teams if they're doing events, just to catch up with them. If you glean a little bit of information from the players, it is super helpful and brings the audience in more, you know. So for example, the US team, I saw them, the women's team there in Dubai at an event they had, and the captain was telling me that they were doing Christmas carols every night. And I'm like, what do you mean doing Christmas carols? They're like, yes, for some reason, it's the thing they'd be doing. And that one of the players would hand out the lyrics to everybody and they would sing Christmas carols. Then some other teams got involved. So that's a kind of cool little extra thing that you wouldn't know if you just study their bios, right? But actually speaking to the players, you get more information. So your preparation is, you know, 3 or 4 days when you're on the ground, and you start preparing when you're in your home country as well before you even get there, because there's a lot of teams. We would then have a production meeting the day before, and in the production meeting, we would be on site testing all the equipment, making sure everything kind of works and feels good. Then we have a meeting back at the hotel as well, which goes through any of the broadcast requirements. There might be, you know, a certain hashtag we need to use, certain things we need to talk about during the broadcast, certain things we're not meant to talk about. We would review from one of the head referees that would come through in this tournament. We strictly looking at these certain elements of the game. So we know as commentators how to communicate that to the audience. That is very important. We then, of course, have our own commentators meeting, which we talk about name pronunciation, go through any of the schedule questions and things like that. So that's kind of a lot of prep. And then I don't tend to sleep well the night before, because I kind of, you know, am a little anxious, right? You have those kind of butterflies for a big tournament day, whether you're playing or involved in another capacity. And then you're up early. You're up super early the next morning. You want to print out your notes, make sure you got everything ready. And then off you go to the stadium and in the bus. And it's a full day. Even though you don't commentate every game, you preparing for once you finish the game, you're getting maximum energy. So you firstly have to rest your voice. You know, I tend to take along throat coat tea and echinacea and those kind of things, and, you know, have those warm teas to kind of soothe my throat a bit. And then you prepare for the next games. And the crazy thing is that while you know what games you're doing on day one and day two, you don't know what games you're doing during the knockout level. You get told the night before. And so then that's quick preparation. So in essence, you do need to prepare for all 28 sides, because you never know who you're going to be commentating on finals day. But it is thrilling. It's super exciting. And of course, it's a huge honor and a privilege to be able to be one of those very few voices selected.
Yeah. And you mentioned the voice being for someone, the first aspect they appreciate when they tune in to a sports event, for someone is video. If the video quality is bad, then okay, I'm gonna turn it off. But if, you know, you always got to be positive and you know, pumped and always in action. And personally, this is what keeps me tuned in with what's going on in front of me on the screen or live. If I don't know, there are some technologies helping me out with that. But touch basing a little bit the communication, I think this is going to be, besides the fact that it will help me, it will help a lot of others. At least I have some friends that also are struggling with the same thing. Like, how are you getting better at communication? Especially, I'm not sure if you had this in the past, but especially for those who might, English might be not the first language, and, you know, and they're involved in commentating or podcasting or anything like that. What's your top tips that helps you improving your communication when it comes to commentating, let's say?
Yeah. So firstly, for me, my personal experience in the commentary world, I tend to speak quite quickly and quite fast, and I needed to work on slowing that down a bit. Now, again, when a game is exciting and somebody scores, yes, it's natural to speed up your voice and get that excitement coming through. And so I think every commentator has something personally they're working on, whether it's, you know, for me, it was slowing down, but I still have that excitement that I tend to bring to a game, but it's probably enunciating my words, you know, as best as possible. And when you speak about somebody coming to do English in their second language, we had Santiago Gomez Cora, a famous Argentine sevens player on the Sevens World Series and now coach for the Argentine team as well. So he had to commentate with us at the Rugby World Cup, which is obviously such a massive event. And it was amazing, though, because if you work at something, like we said during the podcast, that's a general theme. If you spend enough time working on something and you have at least a little bit of talent, you will get through and you'll do a great job. Santi was so great, though, because he came to Joel, myself, the other two commentators, and he would sit down with us individually and go through some of the questions he wanted to ask in the pregame interviews. And then he wanted to think of ways to describe things in different words. And so we would help him, and he would practice saying those words. So he did a lot of preparation beforehand, and it came across in the games. It came across that he was more prepared and was more comfortable in his words. Now, he also had English lessons He goes weekly to somebody that, you know, he knows in Argentina and goes through that as well to practice because he was nervous. He had only commentated 2 or 3 games before being invited to the World Cup. But I think it's so special because, you know, we need voices that sound different as well. Yeah. And that's the great thing too. And so that South American voice and flair that he brings in, his own insight that he brings to the game as a former player, you know, is invaluable. I think those are kind of good advice points. Just, again, it comes down to practice, right? If you can practice in a, you know, foreign language and you record yourself and listen back and maybe get someone who knows the language better to give some of their tips, don't be shy for feedback. Feedback is very important. Some people, when I say feedback's important, don't take everybody's feedback as the be-all and end-all. For example, I got told as a rugby commentator once that I shouldn't make any jokes during the game. But again, this was from somebody who was older in their thinking and, you know, more risk adverse. And in the end, that little bit of humor that I use in commentary is something that sets you apart, right? It's something that makes you unique. So I would say keep going for it, unless you're doing something which is a total no-no. I would say you still need to bring yourself to the game.
Yeah. Do you have to love your voice, or you don't? It's not an important aspect to all this. Like as you know, Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't love to hear himself, or I believe watch himself as well, as a world class actor. But what do you think from the commentator's aspect?
Yeah, I'm impartial to it. I don't necessarily like my voice per se. And when I hear it sometimes, I'm like, oh no, you know? So no, I you don't need to like your voice for sure. Absolutely. And again, everybody sounds different. I think you don't need to worry about that. Just be who you are, embrace it and go with it. I think that's probably the biggest advice there. But I do sometimes listen back to like older games that I did and I cringe when I hear myself on it. So yeah, you don't always have to like it.
No, that's cool. And of course, 2020, where everyone going through difficult times, you know, COVID hit and a lot of competition, unfortunately, if not all of them, got canceled. From your side, besides the project that if this video will go, if this will go in video format, everyone will see your background again. But besides Rugby Hive podcast, what other projects you've been involved in? And if you somehow pivoted to something new with World Rugby, because I saw a lot of awesome job of doing some storytelling as well from the World Rugby aspect, some shows, some short form shows or personal projects. Well, can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think as in the broadcasting world, you know, the things you have your knowledge of rugby and you have your voice, you know, and you have that kind of broadcasting experience. So for me, it was, you know, looking at ways how I can use the similar skill set and produce something remotely. And so, you know, working with the Major League Rugby franchise, working with the New England Free Jacks, you know, their content creation, doing weekly things for them, I think was great and an easy way for me to keep involved. I've done a ton of hosting of different events. That has been nice because it's different being in a room and being a host than being a virtual host online. It is a similar skill set, but of course, slightly different. And so having that experience, you know, on this kind of Zoom kind of video platform has been good. So I've done quite a few events like that. And then of course you mentioned the podcast. And the other thing is I thought about other ways to be involved in different things. It's being an ambassador for certain companies out there, right? So one of them is a friend of mine has a travel company in South Africa, and the British and Irish Lions will be coming to South Africa next year. And so we teamed up where, you know, I would help guide people from around the world outside of the EU and the UK because they have to go through the official Lions group, but he's accredited in South Africa. And so those are ways remotely I could put a message out and say, if anybody's interested in these ticket inclusive packages, reach out to me or reach out to the company. And the same thing I've got set up with another company called Rugby Coffee. They're slightly different, which they have a give back incentive, which I love. And so a portion of their proceeds will go back to a charity of my choice, which is Play Rugby USA. They're a nonprofit based in New York City that use rugby as a vehicle for social change. And so if there's a way I can, you know, help the rugby community, you know, which benefits people in need at the same time as helping a company do business, that is certainly, you know, things that are definitely what you look out for in today's society. So those are just definitely some things that I've looked to get involved in.
Yeah. This is also something new I've been thinking about because you've been through in commentating for a long time. Where do you see the trend going with, you know, as well as COVID situation as well. But we'll have, of course, we're getting more and more events coming back, you know, as we're recording this on December 11th. Today is the NBA tip-off, for example, and, you know, more and more events. NFL is going on. If we're talking about the U.S. sport right now, of course, in Europe, there are a lot of football or soccer, if you're from the U.S., going on right now. A lot of rugby as well. Where do you see the trend of commentating this job going? Like, do you see this being a remote thing as well? Like, I saw a lot of things and a lot of apps right now, not a lot, but a few of them that are incentivizing fans to pick up the just recording live to commentate a game or something like this, and they get, you know, paid or and where do you see this going in the next 5 years, let's say?
Yeah, that's a great point. So there are many companies, but there's one I'm very familiar with out of New Zealand called Spulk. And mm-hmm. Spulk basically provide that platform. And the initial thinking behind it was very interesting, was that let's say that NBA game is going on, right? We obviously have, you know, the broadcasters in America doing the games and they're there in the stadium. But you could be a Russian in your home country and commentate that game in your native language to anybody who wants to listen to the Russian version of it. And so you can do that in all different languages. So it's like a fan can be close up and personal. They just take the footage from the stadium that had their, if they have access to it, right? And then they can commentate with their voice over it. And so I think that's very exciting. In terms of COVID then, obviously. So this company was set up before COVID, but now everybody's looking at those remote options. And so even Major League Rugby, which obviously will have 13 franchises playing each other here in the US next year, if all goes according to plan, remote options are likely to be put in place for even those rugby events, because it means your broadcasters need to obviously go to one location, but once they're there, they can commentate. If there are six games in the weekend, they could technically do them all. So number one, it obviously saves in travel, saves in some of the costs associated with going to all these different venues. And particularly, you know, if you look at the Sevens World Series, then you're talking about large numbers when you're moving people internationally. And so I remember doing on this Spulk platform, the Major League Rugby had a weekend in Las Vegas early in 2020. It was a showcase weekend. And so I commentated a game live there. And then I went into another room and I hooked up my headset and I hooked up my microphone and I commentated the Sevens World Series Challenger Series, which was happening live in Chile in South America. And so all I needed was to log into the Spulk system. They'd set me up there, a tech person helped me, and I called the game live. It was like Germany against Chile or something. So yes, those capabilities, A, it means broadcasters can do more because you don't need to travel back and forth. And it also means you can have the games in more in different languages, which I think is very important as well. It brings the game to more people, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I brought this point up, because I truly believe that now this is a really awesome way to engage fans as well. Especially there are a lot of good commentators out there who know a lot about different sports, different players, different teams. And I think them sharing their knowledge with the world, it's a huge asset to everyone who wants to follow a certain competition or team. So I'm all about this, and I think this is where it goes as well. Not gonna say that the traditional commentating ecosystem will disappear, but I think it's gonna be a good mix.
I think so too. I think, and you know, just to finish off the question about where do I see it in 5 years. I still think there's a great need for having people on site, because you still would like to do, you know, in a post-COVID world, you would like to do your pre and post player and coach interviews. You still want to, you know, have your commentators there in case there's on-camera things they need to do. And so there will still be an element of that for sure, particularly the ones that have bigger budgets, right, and the bigger networks. But for the ones that don't, the nice thing is you don't always have to see your broadcasters. And so it provides more opportunities for people anywhere in the world, which is nice. You don't need to just be in a specific country or city now, which is great. And that's the thing, is using the technology we currently have to, you know, to save money, but also to get, as you said, get more fans involved and get more people exposed to the game, I think is great.
Right. Dallin, I'll invite you to play with me the hot stone. Named it this way because because my dad is a rugby coach and we used to play the hot potato. So I'll throw at you those potatoes, aka the questions, or names or random stuff, and to get to know you more, to also get into your memories as well. So we'll start with that. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it. Throw those hot stones my way.
All right. So what's your top event you have ever been part as a player?
As a player, I'm going to say the Hong Kong Sevens. Just an unbelievable atmosphere, electric, and something as a young kid, I've always looked up to the Hong Kong event as the marquee one. And so be able to run out there and represent the US, the Eagles, that certainly was very special.
That's awesome. What's your top event you have ever been part of as a commentator?
Rugby World Cup 2019, Japan. That was, you know, unbelievable to see how many Japanese fans supported their nation, supported all the teams. I got a chance to do Japan against Samoa, 40,000 packed stadium, and Japan scored 4 tries, which they needed to get the bonus point to go into their knockouts. They did it in the 81st minute after, you know, the clock went red. Crowd was going berserk. It was, yeah, it was an unreal time and just magic memories.
Oh, that's cool. If you'd have to choose an event to commentate, which one would be A, final of the Olympic Games, I mean the rugby event, or the Rugby World Cup final as a commentator?
Oh, great question. Wow. The Olympic Games is something which is so fascinating, is so amazing, and something, particularly now being in the US, is so important. And it's tricky to get on as a broadcaster. So, wow, Rugby World Cup final. I mean, look, the beautiful thing is the question is either one is just a brilliant, brilliant one. I mean, Rugby World Cup would be amazing, but I think Olympics would really be special. It would be really, you know, something different as well. So I go Olympics.
There you go. Who is your favorite athlete of all time?
Favorite athlete of all time. In rugby terms, there is a player from South Africa. His name is Donnie Khaba, and he was just a genius on the field in the 15-a-side game for the Springboks. So he's certainly somebody I, as a young kid looking up, watching, was very impressive. And if I switch across now to, you know, the Sevens World Series, particularly watching the US play, someone like Perry Baker, the things he can do on the field that, you know, do inspire people and inspire nations, I'm just so impressed.
And since we're also pushing towards diversity, and who is your favorite female athlete of all time?
Yes. So I followed a lot of tennis as well growing up, you know, so the Williams sisters, just amazing to see them play. And I would so stick to rugby. I'd say the US have produced a lot of brilliant women players. Currently, right now, the player that I really enjoy watching is Lev Kelter, the captain of the US side for a few years. Just so abrasive, so creative. But then you've got fast players like Nia Tapper on the outside. They get the ball and they're gone, you know. So there are so many brilliant women rugby players. And even on our podcast, we do feature quite a few legends from all different countries as well.
Right. And who is your favorite teammate of all time?
Wow, of all time, that's a tough one.
You can go both ways, as a player and as a commentator.
Okay, yes, good. Okay, that's great. As a player, I've had some really good teammates growing up in South Africa, and then quite a few moving across here to the US. I would say there is a small group of 3 or 4 of us that had a great time in the Sevens World Series, but I would say Chris Wiles is certainly, you know, somebody that we still obviously get on really well as good mates, but he lives in England now. But he and I had a lot of good laughs on the tours and stuff like that. And then as a commentator, it will probably be Carl Tanana, KT. We've traveled a lot around the world on the Sevens World Series. We did the Under 20 Championship in Argentina, plus we did the Rugby World Cup. He is just an absolute brilliant Zulu warrior, a great man to sink a few cold jars with.
I will send this clip to Sean Maloney just to yeah.
don't tell Sean, you know.
I'll tag him on social. All right. Who is your favorite opponent who you would avoid at all time?
So favorite opponent to avoid, playing Fiji, New Zealand and South Africa were always very physical and very tough. But I would probably will say William Ryder from Fiji. He, you know, had more steps than the Great Wall of China. He was somebody who was, if you could just lay one hand on him as a touch, then you would have done well. So yeah, he was somebody that was very daunting to face, especially when you're given 2 or 3 meters of space.
All right. If you'd have an opportunity to work in an event you haven't already, which one that would be?
So you touched on the Olympic Games. That is something that definitely stands out as the pinnacle of you know, all sports, and for rugby now as well. So that would be something for sure. It's on my vision board as well.
Okay. What would be your dream organization to work for?
Any organization that, you know, because I'm in the rugby space, but any organization that give back to the community, particularly the at-risk community. And so that's why I mentioned an organization like Play Rugby USA. I did work for them in Los Angeles for 7 years. And, you know, when we said it's important to do something you love, I think then it's coupled with the fact that if the company does good for the community and society, then you've ticked all the boxes, and not only makes you happy, but helps other people as well.
That's awesome. You touch base one of the awesome things, giving back to the community. And I think this is what makes an organization better than the other. So I loved how you said that. What is the best advice you have ever received?
I would probably go with a quote, and I'll explain it. Blessed is the man who expects nothing, for he will never be disappointed. And the reason why I say that, and I don't want to misconstrue what the meaning is, don't necessarily expect things to come your way per se, but if you're positive and you work towards it, you can expect them. And so in all essence in life of what you do, if you are positive, you're a positive person and put good energy out there and focus on always the good in everything. And so just because a job opportunity comes your way and you don't land it, don't worry about that. There'll be other things that come your way. So I feel like, you know, you don't have that high expectation that you're going to get something, but you can always focus on the positives in every situation in life. And then that will propel you forward to great things.
Love it. And what is the advice for the aspiring young guys and gals who want to become one day sports commentators?
Just go for it. Just be yourself. Bring that to whatever sport you are calling or commentating, and know that it's a long journey. It's a long road. Just because you don't get an opportunity this year or something doesn't come your way in the sporting world, don't give it up. If you're passionate about something, you will be successful in the long run if you keep at it. Opportunities and things will come your way. And it's up to you how you determine success, right? Success could be commentating a high school rugby game. That is what your goal is, and you set out, you could do that. Or it could be going to a Rugby World Cup to commentate that final that you mentioned. But keep working towards it, because if you enjoy it enough, the good things will come.
That's awesome. Dallin, thanks for playing with me the hot stone. Before wrapping it up, how the listeners of this podcast can find you, what you do, and also from my side, I really want to motivate the listeners to go and subscribe to your Rugby Hive podcast. It's an awesome one. I started to listen to it as well. Just share how they can get in touch if someone has any questions on this side of commentating side. If they, of course, will want to connect with you to ask any extra questions or have any doubts, how they can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So on social media, they can get me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And my account there is The Rugby Corner. So three words, The Rugby Corner. Or if they want to get my podcast, it's Rugby Hive. And so that's also on the social media channels as well. I'm very responsive. So if anybody has any questions, anybody will reach out to me, no problem whatsoever. I think it's important for us to help people in the community with any advice. And I'm always in favor. I know there's enough opportunities for everybody. So it's always important to help people out, because I'm in a position where I am today because many others have helped me get here. And so if I can do anything, a small part, to help somebody else with advice or tips or connections, I'm happy to provide that.
That's really awesome. Dallin, thanks a lot for giving us a lot of insights. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope the audience got a lot of value as well. And if you guys felt connected with Dallin, I'll post all his socials and all the information in the episode notes. So reach out to him, connect him, everyone out there. And Dallin, thanks a lot again, and good luck with the upcoming MLR season. The schedule just released, so I'm really excited as well. Hopefully, it's not going to cut short as it was this year, unfortunately. But it's you mentioned 13 teams is going to be exciting.
Thank you very much, yeah, for everything you do and the advice and tips and guests you have on. Really, really special. And yeah, I hope the season goes well, and we'll hopefully get some one-liners out there and keep everybody entertained.
Yeah, Dallin, take care.
That was it for this episode. Please share it with your friends and everyone who you think will get value out of it. Also share it on all social media platforms and tag the Big E using the details from the episode notes. If you enjoyed it, leave a rate and review. Make sure you stay tuned and subscribe to not miss another episode. On behalf of the eProcast team, stay safe and see you in the next one. Peace out.